authentic and transparent experience greater happiness and social connection. Imam Hussein al-Salam's demand for authenticity aligns perfectly with what science tells us about well-being. So, before we end, I want you to take a moment to reflect. Are your relationships affected by deceit or dishonesty? Do you carry resentment that weighs on your heart? Are you truly authentic, or do you wear masks to fit in? So let's reflect upon these and build a better life for ourselves. Let's change. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
You just listened to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin.
Well, I know it's more than love now, 'cause you mean everything. Hear you talking when you're sleeping. Reality, know you're going through hardship, and I know that you're scared, but you don't need to worry, 'cause Allah is there. Ooh, oh, I will never let you go. You're my heart, my love, my soul, and the choices that we made, we gotta make our own. Gotta stand on our feet as we take this direction. When we take on the world, all the diamonds and pearls, couldn't take me away from your smile and your love. And I know you feel lost, and you wanna give up. After every hardship comes ease, hardship comes ease. May Allah bless our way and our intention. Stay pure. Singing a lullaby. Oh, I will never let you go. You're my heart, my life, my soul. And the choices that we made, we gotta make our own. Gotta stand on our feet as we take this direction. Oh, 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 oh. Hardship comes in, hardship comes in.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, The Helper. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to A to Z here on Iron Beings Radio with me, Sister Zainab. And obviously the topic of helping is a huge one. It's something we're always supposed to be like ready. We should always be prepared to help where we can, and helping can take different forms. I've probably talked about this in other episodes. So help can be, for example, financial help. It can be giving money. It can even be lending money. There's sort of huge merit and blessings in lending money to people. Help can be just time to just sit with someone, listen to them. Help can be doing things for people, doing chores, running errands for people. Help can be help actually teaching, educating people. So that's just some examples. But I want to first of all mention a sort of behavior by one of the martyrs from the Holy Defense by the name of Hossein Chayestefar. Who, for example, so his wife had never had to sort of go out on her own and do the shopping. So when she had grown up in her own, sort of with her parents, she didn't have to shop for anything. And so this was basically also agreed when she got married to her husband so her husband was told that, you know, she'd never done anything like that herself. And her husband actually agreed. So Hossein Chayestefar said that he would do everything for her. And what obviously eventuated is that they'd often sort of go out together to do the shopping. And so obviously this goes towards the dignity of the woman. And obviously this is particular thinking about marriage. So what is it that the woman was used to before? Because obviously in general, whatever the woman was used to before, if that can be replicated when she gets married, so she goes from the parental home and then into the sort of marriage home, so that's in a sense the ideal that people would try to sort of replicate. So okay, if she never did the shopping before, let's see if we can keep it at the same when she's married. Welcome back to A to Z here on Iron Beings Radio. I'm talking about this idea of helping, and specifically was talking about, you know, a setup, for example, the martyr from the Holy Defense, Hossein Chayestefar, who sort of agreed with his wife's parents because they said that she had never done the shopping on her own, didn't have to do anything like that, and so he agreed that he'd always do the shopping. And of course, he and his wife then would do the shopping together usually. But obviously it's this idea, okay, so if the woman has not done the shopping before, then the husband maybe agrees that he'll do that. If the woman was used to a particular lifestyle before, then often that is replicated. And yeah, obviously this is these are sort of blessings and sort of recognition also by Allah in Islam of the dignity of the woman, that the woman has particular characteristics. So maybe just physically, it's a bit more difficult for a woman to run around all over the place carrying heavy bags and do all the shopping. That's probably just be a basic fact. So physically, it's easier for the man because the man is sort of made physically in a different way. Just having sort of more physical strength to, you know, go and carry all the heavy bags. And obviously this... the idea of sort of being compassionate and kind and sort of being self-sacrificing a bit too, because, you know, and many people do this. So in our families, we might go and do the shopping, whether it's for the spouse, for the wife, whether it's doing shopping for, let's say, one of the teenage girls who, you know, could probably walk to the shop because it's very close, but, you know, they don't want to. So again, we try to make it easy. We go and get the little things they need. you know, even if it's late, we will sort of maybe as parents have just have run out and get something if one of the kids wants something, or if the, you know, if one of the parents, if the mother is elderly, we'd maybe go out and sort of try and make things easier. So, you know, it's just this idea that, you know, we are ready to help, you know, no matter what shape that help takes, inshallah. And so I look forward to welcoming you to another episode of A to Z here on RMB English Radio, and farewell for now. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of A to Z. And for more information, please also visit our website at www.iranradio.ir.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Sound from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
And welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashmi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, I will start off this Spotlight with words from former U.S. Secretary of State Henry Kissinger, which are quite apropos. He said that it may be dangerous to be America's enemy, but to be America's friend is fatal. Well, perhaps some of the U.S.'s closest allies can definitely agree with Kissinger's assessment, as Washington is putting major tariffs on country after country, from Japan and South Korea to the EU, Mexico, and Canada. None have been exempted. But why? And will this make America great again, as U.S. President Trump says, or will it expedite the U.S.'s isolation? I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Larry Johnson, former CIA analyst out of Brandenton. And Gilbert Doctorow, independent international affairs analyst out of Brussels.
The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Well, thank you both for being with me. Let me start this off with Larry. I mean, the U.S. President has announced a new tariffs threats to take place from August the 1st. Actually announced it in a post on Truth Social. Let's start from here. I mean, what message does Trump want to send by announcing these tariffs on social media?
Using threats instead of diplomacy. It really is terribly counterproductive. And Trump is, you know, he's succeeded so far this year in building up a reputation as a guy who will make a lot of threats, but doesn't always follow through on them. We saw that in particular some of his comments about Gaza, and he threatened Hamas that there'd be hell to pay. He did that two or three times. So now with the tariffs, he has he's turned it into a form of sanctions. And as you correctly noted, he's using it against his friends, you know, or what should be our friends. Brazil has always been close to the United States. And, you know, there was some suspicion that Lula and his chairmanship of BRICS for this year would be the one most likely to be the weakest. It would cave in to U.S. pressure. Now Trump in one day succeeded in flipping Lula into, you know, just complete outrage over the U.S. wanting to impose sanctions on Brazil for internal political and judicial decisions. It just makes no sense.
Yeah, well, Gilbert, I mean, your thoughts. The trade deficit, according to Trump, this is what he says, the trade deficit is a major threat to the U.S. economy and indeed U.S. national interests. Your thoughts?
Oh, Trump has put out many justifications, some of them contradictory, changing from day to day. But I never follow closely what he says. I follow where his feet are pointed, what he does. And I agree with Larry Johnson that this is about sanctions, only I don't agree in which direction they're faced. These are sanctions directed against the United States. There is a lot of talk going back several years that Donald Trump had a bromance with Vladimir Putin, that he was saw in him a fellow authoritarian. I'm speaking now of remarks about Trump that were made by his enemies, of whom there are many. And this was the reason for the outreach to Trump to Putin coming from Mr. Trump. I never agreed with any of that. Certainly not a kinship among authoritarians or anti-democratic forces. That is utter nonsense. But what I do believe that Mr. Trump has had a long period of envy towards Mr. Putin. Make America great again? Well, he has to look across the ocean to Moscow, and Mr. Putin has definitely used his 20 years in office to make Russia great again. So, but how did he do it? In large part, in the last five years, thanks to the sanctions, or going back to 2014, when the first severely punitive sanctions were imposed on by the United States, and then followed up by the Europeans with a delay of several months. These sanctions created an import replacement program. It created a reindustrialization program in Russia. And that is precisely what Mr. Trump has envied enormously in Russia. And these tariffs, so-called tariffs, are not tariffs directed against anybody. They are sanctions directed against the United States. Its intent is to achieve in the United States what Mr. Putin has achieved by sanctions.
Well, why do you say this is actually sanctions against the U.S.? Can you expand on that, Gilbert?
Well, this makes it difficult, if not impossible, to import a great many products that the United States can and should be producing at home. The whole globalization program is something that Mr. Trump has despised. The alliance system is something that Mr. Trump has criticized severely going back decades. There's nothing new in this. He is a believer in an industrially powerful United States.
Okay.
He is a believer that American military strength will be founded on production at home. And frankly, I think he's dead right.
Okay, well, Larry, I mean, Trump says that he will impose 30% tariffs on the EU, which is the U.S.'s biggest trading partner. Let's look at that side of things. First of all, why? And let's look at the effects, first on people living in the EU and also on regular American citizens. Your thoughts?
Well, the EU is not the U.S. biggest trading partner. The top three are China, Canada, and Mexico. Candidly, there's very little the United States needs out of the EU. There's, they may want to have the EU as a market for U.S. products, but this entire tariff regime, it's backfiring, and we haven't yet seen the effects of it. I think there was an expectation that when he first announced the tariffs across the board, that there you were going to see immediate economic repercussions. Because you haven't seen inflation surge in the United States, for example, you got several of the Trump advisors taking a victory lap, say, congratulating themselves. But I've got a neighbor down the street from me who manufactures sports equipment, baseball bats, hockey sticks, and lacrosse sticks. And he was a Trump supporter. And he was lamenting to me on the 4th of July get-together at his house that he goes, Trump's killing me with these tariffs. He says, I've just had to come up with $150,000 for the latest shipment. He said, we didn't budget for that. And so he started talking about he's going to have to factor in price hikes on his sports equipment. And then he commented, you know, and my business is slowing down. Now, he's what I'd call a small to middle-sized business. Multiply that across the United States. Then you've got the other effect of, you know, Trump wanting to say he's going to benefit farmers, except our farmers used to have a significant portion of the market in China where they would provide corn, soybeans, wheat. Well, guess where China is buying that from now? Brazil and Russia. And the U.S. has lost that market share. So that's where I think, you know, another dimension of what Gil was talking about, that it ends up sanctioning the United States, but instead of having that desired effect to promote domestic industry, it's actually creating some incentives and dynamics that are going to make it even more impossible for people to actually come here and build and reindustrialize.
Well, I mean, Larry, wouldn't Trump or shouldn't he have known the effects? We were talking about, for example, small businesses, medium businesses, and even larger businesses, that obviously if you're going to put this type of tariffs on countries, then it's going to be reciprocated to a certain degree, and
right.
It's going to be much more costly for the average American consumer.
In Trump world, the narcissist that he is, what he says is the best, it's the smartest, it's the biggest, it's the most wonderful. How can you question him? You know, I admit I had voted for the guy over Kamala Harris, but I'm regretting it now. He is, his mental state, his decision making is very, very erratic. And there is no strategy. He's not a chess player, never has been. You know, casinos and golf, okay? Sort of someone who's going to go to the gaming table and take a chance without thinking it through. Like a good chess player, they're thinking through three or four or five moves ahead. That's not Trump. And he's just throwing it at the wall and seeing what sticks.
Okay, well, Gilbert, let's look at Mexico. Now, that side of things, another country, 30% tariffs that have been announced. Now, Mexico, at the beginning of the second term of Trump, basically had said that they would cooperate with him and for basically the U.S. not to increase the tariffs. And the Mexicans have been cooperating with the United States, have extradited many leaders of drug cartels. However, now, all of a sudden, again, Trump has come back and said that 30% tariffs would definitely be thrown against Mexico now. I mean, why?
Well, look across the border where the U.S. car makers are manufacturing a large part of their production. And I think he would like that to end. And if he changes the rule of the game, which is a 30% across the board tariff, and I think even higher the tariffs on car parts and so forth, then yes, the American car manufacturers will have to completely rethink their game, and they will be producing more in the States. I don't think it's essential that there be foreign investment in production facilities in the States, as if the United States is unable to raise capital at home for industrial projects. So I think that he is saying many things which are totally irrelevant to his intention. His intention is to cut back sharply on American imports and to make it essential that these products, which can and should be produced in the United States, are produced there. There were so many incentives given to American multinationals, largely in the area of taxes, which encouraged them to manufacture abroad and to retain their earnings abroad. Mr. Trump is undoing all of that, and I don't agree that he has no concept of what he wants, because what he's doing, he's wanted to do for 30 years. So it isn't just a matter of recent whim. What is whim is how he explains it to the public. And he will say anything, changing day to day, to keep all of his enemies off balance. But what he wants fundamentally is a reindustrialization, because the products are too expensive and unattractive when imported under these tariffs.
Well, what about that, Larry, what Gilbert just said? He wants reindustrialization. Is that going to happen? Do you see the United States going in that direction?
No. I agree that that's what he wants. And you know, let me put it, I give you a personal context for this. Let me take you back 52 years ago when I graduated from high school. At that time, my father worked at a steel mill, Armco Steel. My friend's father worked at Standard Oil or at Bendix Corporation or at General Motors. So the people in my high school class, most of them were working in factories. They were manufacturing. They were building things. We had very few sons and daughters of lawyers or doctors or insurance salesmen. The majority were industry. Go back today, all of those industries are gone from my hometown, Independence, Missouri, which was where Harry Truman was from. And that has taken place across the United States. So when you get that kind of deindustrialization, and then you compound it by the point about what Putin did starting 25 years ago, was he didn't invest in military in order to go out and invade other countries and run up, spend literally $1 trillion in places like Iraq and Afghanistan and Syria and Libya and Serbia and Panama. He stayed at home and invested in the infrastructure there in Russia, which is why today Russia is magnificent, absolutely magnificent. I was knocked over by my visits there. And you don't see that in the United States. You come into to New York City, it's a trash heap. Philadelphia, even Washington, D.C., they started to clean the homeless out of the Union Station. But again, it's a nice dream to have, but I don't think they've got the practical resources in place at the very time when the rest of the global South has said, we're done with being bullied by the United States. We're going to set up our own financial system where we don't have to be under the threat of sanctions and bullying.
Well, speaking of bullying, Gilbert, basically what countries have to do now, those who are supposed to be facing these tariffs, either they have to allow the U.S. greater access to their markets, or they're going to face major tariffs. Now, the U.K. has agreed to give Washington greater access to its markets. That's the tariffs so far there against London are only 10%. Your thoughts about this, and what does that mean for a country in general, that they would have to basically open up their markets or, pay a major price? I mean, your overall assessment of this.
I don't think they will open their markets, and I think they will pay a major price. But that is the new world order. Just to comment on timelines, I think that my colleague Larry is looking at this in a kind of typical business quarter to quarter. I think Mr. Trump is looking at this for the duration of his time in office. He is in a unique position. He cannot run again for presidency. So he can do something that will be, in the short term, extremely unpopular, without facing the consequences of continuing in office. He's doing this for the good of the country as he sees it. Whether that will work out or not just has to be considered. But let's look at Mr. Putin's success. It took him 5 years. The immediate impact of the sanctions on Russia was very harsh. There was inflation, very sharp inflation. there was cut back in spending power of population. I had this in my notes from 2015. It didn't, the miracle didn't happen at once. And to expect that Mr. Trump from 1 month to the next is going to reindustrialize America is of course untrue and impossible. But over 5 years he can. Mr. Putin did this over 5 years, starting in 2014. Well, more than that, 10 years. You don't do this at once, but you have to get started.
Okay, so you disagree. Disagree with Larry, or Larry disagrees with your assessment of...
I don't think we're necessarily in disagreement, because, and I'm not suggesting that they could reindustrialize in, a quarter to quarter. The United States faces some very significant problems, and Trump's approach to it, I used to think a little bit like Gil does, as far as that maybe Trump had a broader plan in mind and was actually thinking ahead. But I've got the benefit of a very close associate of mine who's been in meetings with Trump. I mean, we're not talking with 100 people. We're talking 3 or 4 people on a particular issue, 6 times in the last 18 months. And my last conversation with him, he pointed out, he says, Trump's deteriorated significantly. So he's mentally not what he was even 18 months ago. Mm-hmm. And you see that a little bit. And if you saw the other day when he was being questioned about who made the decision to suspend sending weapons to Kiev, he goes, I don't know. What do you know? And then the next day the reporter said, well, have you found out who made that decision? Well, I make all the decisions. I know what's going on, and I didn't make that decision. It's just when you're hearing somebody talk like that, that are non sequiturs, then you've got to be concerned that when it comes to the economic policy, that they're not really thinking it through, because instead of reducing the deficit and reducing the spending, they're jacked up defense spending to $1 trillion from $870 billion, and the budget has gone, they've expanded it. So they're not, they're continuing to spend recklessly. And so that's why I say, I don't think, he may have these broad objectives in mind, but he's not taking the fundamental steps to get there, I don't think.
I mean, what does this mean, Gilbert? Is it just all Trump? I mean, obviously he has advisors. What's going on here? Because we're just talking back and forth and really not even saying the United States, but we're saying Trump. Has the United States deteriorated to that degree that basically it's a one-man show that he's making the decisions? I mean, how do you see it?
Well, Larry referred to his narcissism, and I fully agree. He would like us to think that it's a one-man show, although that isn't a very good thing in general to present to serious thinking people. He has, of course, a team. He is not running this by himself. As regards his nonsensical, contradictory statements to the press, I look at a bigger issue. He has nothing but contempt for American journalists, and with good reason. When you look at Fox News, when you look at CNN, why shouldn't he have contempt for any of the journalists who push a microphone in front of his face? So he'll say anything, however nonsensical, to show this contempt. But that does not mean that he is mentally unbalanced or has mentally deteriorated. I don't know. I agree with Elon Musk on his big, beautiful bill. I am not a worshiper of Mr. Trump, but I do see the concept behind what he's doing, even if it's explained in the most intentionally confusing way. There is a logic to it. I don't know if it'll succeed. I do know one thing. There is going to be substantial economic pain in the States as a result of his tariff policy. We haven't begun to see it. Here I agree completely with Larry Johnson. How he will weather that storm remains to be seen.
Well, Larry, let's look at the French side of things now, because we also know the EU also been hit with 30% tariffs now. French President Emmanuel Macron said the EU must reciprocate and respond in kind. Do you think that's likely to happen?
this kind of mutual self-destruction if I could see the Russians, they're going out and they're buying big bags of popcorn, and they're sitting back in their chair and they're eating and just enjoying the spectacle of watching the United States and Europe consume each other. This kind of foolishness at a time when Europe and the United States combined, as Mark Rutte, the Secretary General of NATO, observed a couple of months back, they cannot match Russia's production on a whole variety of issues. In particular, he's referring to artillery shells, saying that Russia produces more in 3 months than Europe and the United States do in an entire year. And that's absolutely correct. So to the extent that the French wants to start jacking up tariffs on the United States and vice versa, that all that does is hurts the economies of each of those countries. This doesn't make people wealthier. It makes them overall poorer. So this is it may bring a few more dollars into the governments, but the governments across the board, frankly, are bankrupt. None of them are experiencing any kind of growth in Europe right now. You know, they're basically stagnated. So and Gil's right that this, you know, when he talks about the pain that's going to come, I don't think the folks in the West are prepared for it.
Mm-hmm. Well, we also know, Gilbert, that Trump has said 35% tariffs for Canada. Now, the Canadians are saying they're going to diversify trade and turn towards the EU. Your thoughts, as Washington goes more towards protectionism, I mean, do you think that we're going to see more of these allied countries look in a different direction? And your overall assessment of what that means for the United States itself?
Well, they will look in different directions, and that's all they're going to do is look. It's one thing to say, being inside a major international corporation, you understand at once that the idea of finding new markets for your company's products is an idea that takes time to realize. It doesn't go from month to month. This takes years. And so the notion that the Canadians will switch over to Europe, well, it's a very good thing for their prime minister to tell his electors, his voters. But it is in terms of the shores of the whole Canadian is unrealizable in the immediate future. And the country, Canada, will suffer tremendously from what Mr. Trump is doing. But he doesn't care. His point is America does not need and should not have the alliances that it has today on which it is too dependent. It has deprived the United States of well-paying manufacturing jobs that it has exported. And Mr. Trump wants to undo that, although it's a lot of pain, and he may not survive politically when the cost comes. As for the Europeans, well, the American component is not that big a part of their economy. So the sectors will be hit. The French wine producers, or otherwise are in crisis quite without this issue, will suffer enormously. Now, The other side of the equation we haven't addressed is on the United States. Mr. Trump introduced his tariffs saying that he wanted to rebalance American trade. Of course, that's not going to happen. On the contrary, as Larry Johnson pointed out with respect to soybeans and wheat and other agricultural commodities, Americans are going to be hit hard by their usual export markets that will turn their back on it. So there's a lot of pain in many areas. It's too early to predict how this will play out.
All right. And on that note, I thank both of you for being with me on this spotlight. Larry Johnson, former CIA analyst out of Brandenton, Florida, and Gilbert Doctorow, independent international affairs analyst out of Brussels, Belgium. And thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Goodbye.
Suffering within, this is the love has dyed me in blood. Not that I'm wise, neither. took my heart and made fond of it, desired to kill. Come and see what love has done to me. Come and see what love has done to me. Got me deeply involved in despair. Come and see what love has done to me. Come and see what love has done to me. Got me deeply involved in despair. Now and then, like the winds I blow, now and then, like the roads I go, now and then, like the floods I flow. I'm Yunus, mystic of sorrow, suffering wants from top to toe, in the hands of beloved I write in woe. Come and see what love has done to me. Come and see what love has done to me. Got me deeply involved in this pain.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed? Smiling, he would say, I am a Muslim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. With me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh, and welcome to the program.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. We are talking about some of the jurisprudential laws related to the month of Muharram based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. And we'd like to continue along the same line. Sheikh Javid, some religious organizations hold ceremonies and services commemorating the martyrdom of Imam Hussein, peace be upon him. Some of the accounts they recite about how the Imam got martyred, you know, are not necessarily quoted from reliable sources.
Sure.
Right? Or heard from any religious scholars or mujtahid. When the reciters are asked about this, or the source where they are quoting it from, the reply is usually like that, is that the account of the Battle of Karbala can be related by way of inspiration.
Yeah.
As well. And not necessarily through coding. So the question I'd like to ask you is that, can the historical events, such as the martyrdom of Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, and his loyal companions, be related through inspiration, in other words, on the grapevine? If it is not the case, what should be the position of the listeners, you know, of such accounts?
Well, recounting the events in such a way without any evidence of an authoritative account or quoting from a reliable hadith has no basis in Islamic law unless someone says it in his perception of the story. For example, if someone attributes something to the noble prophet, peace be upon him, and his household, without having seen that in any reliable source, it is something wrong. And we know that ascribing lies to the prophet, peace be upon him, is a grave sin, because it can even impact your prayers and fasting. If you are fasting and you ascribe something false to Allah and to the prophet of Islam, peace be upon him, it will impact your fasting. So the same is the case with ascribing something to to Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam and his noble family when it's not evidenced by any stories and any reliable sources. And of course, if someone says that this is my general understanding of the situation, and he describes the situation saying that it's my understanding, it's my estimation, and not something I quote from the book, it's okay, because right. people, okay, it is just his assumption,
yes.
and not something.
On condition that he explicitly mentioned that this is my understanding, my judgment.
Yeah. If he says that, that's okay. And of course, if a lecturer says something which is offensive in common view and which people think to be false and not corroborated by any evidence,
yes.
then it is the duty of the audience to forbid evil and of course stop that person from promoting such false things
or rumors. Thank you very much. Let's take a short break and then we'll be back and continue our program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. Don't go away.
The followers of Ayatollah Khomeini can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khomeini's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Allah, ya Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah, ya Allah. Let me go astray, cause I need you.
Back to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Tawheed, our guest speaker. We are still talking about some of the jurisprudential laws related to the month of Muharram, commemorating the martyrdom of Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, and his loyal companions. With Sheikh Tawheed, based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khomeini. Sheikh Tawheed, what's the Sharia law about throwing disposable cups and bowls into the streets, leaving the city in garbage, in fact? You know, as we know that during these ceremonies, lots of people, in fact, distribute food around.
Yes.
And unfortunately, we see that it's not a good sight to look at. You know, sometimes some people, actually not a lot of them, but few people basically throw and litter away these disposable cups. So what's the Sharia law about this?
Well, we one of the scenes which is kind of regrettable, we see that during, for example, the month of Muharram, or even in the month of Safar, when we see when there is an occasion and a meal is served, and the food, the spoons, the cups are disposable, some people who are not educated enough, they eat the thing and then they throw away. So as you rightly mentioned, they leave their streets in garbage. It's not a good scene to be honest, and it's necessary for the media to educate the people, to tell them that it's not a civilized behavior. it is not okay to leave the city and the streets in mess. And of course, everybody has to individually take it upon himself to to throw the cups, the bowls, and everything that are disposable into the bins, and to keep the city clean.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you very much, Sheikh Shawid. Let's take another break, and then we'll be back and continue our program, Islamic Laws, on RIB English Radio. Stay with us.
Allahumma arzuqni, Allahumma arzuqni, shafa'at al-Husayn, yawm al-hum.
Back to the program, Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio, with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and shared with our guest speaker. We're still talking about some of the jurisprudential laws related to the month of Muharram, commemorating the martyrdom of Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, and his loyal companions, based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei with Sheikh Javid. We know that during this month, Muharram, or even Safar, and more in particular during the Arbain Walk, you see a lot of Muslim communities distribute food around in somehow makeshift stations or tents in the streets, here and there, left, right, center, some people taste a little portion of the food or eat a few spoons from one meal and one food, and because it's not or it doesn't, taste good, they throw it away into the trash cans and bins, and they go for another, for example, makeshift station or mawkib, and try another food. Is there anything wrong with this? I mean, is it basically permissible?
Well, that there is a verse in the Holy Quran which explicitly states that Allah does not love those who are wasteful, those who actually spend something in a wasteful manner. So, of course, from even speaking from a rational point of view, let alone the Holy Quran, let alone the ayat of the Quran, or what the infallible imams have said, and the Prophet has said, of course, it is not wise to waste the food simply because you do not like the food, you just throw it. Why not, just ignore and from the very beginning not to eat the food when you have already had a lot, and it's quite wrong, because there are many poor people.
Yes,
the food can be distributed among the poor people because they have empty stomachs, and it's not understandable why such people do this, but I have seen myself lots of people do this. They just move from one shift station to another station, looking for delicious food. That's not okay, and it's not wise to waste the food.
I see. Sheikh Javid, what's the religious ruling regarding prayers offered in the holy city of Karbala? We know that lots of people go to Karbala during this month or the month of Safar. Should pilgrims shorten their prayers in the holy city of Karbala, or they should offer them in full?
Well, we know that there are certain places where the prayers are a traveler is free to shorten his prayer or offer full prayer.
Yes.
Of course, in the holy city of Mecca, all the religious authorities are agreed on that one is free to offer full prayers or shorten prayers. Also, in the holy city of Medina, a pilgrim is allowed to shorten his prayer or, of course, offer full prayers. But as far as fasting is concerned, fasting is not allowed. because as a traveler, one cannot fast,
mm-hmm.
no matter where he is, whether he is in Mecca or Medina or in Kufa.
Thank you.
As for also Kufa mm-hmm. is concerned, it is not, you are free to shorten your prayer inside the mosque of Kufa,
mm-hmm.
But not outside the Kufa.
I see.
And also when it comes to the shrine of Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam, there is a specific room which is called the room where the Qubba is, okay?
Yes.
Or the chamber of the of Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam. So where the Zari is, as close as to the Zari, one is free to offer full prayers or shortened prayers.
Mm-hmm.
But when a person steps out of that room, the Qubba,
mm-hmm.
Then he is not allowed to offer full prayers.
Thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. Thank you, my dear listeners, for listening to your own program, Islamic Laws, on IRIB English Radio. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Greetings, dear listeners. This is Iran Radio from Tehran, the beautiful capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran. And here's what's awaiting you on your radio station. Don't miss a beat. Up next is Let's Recite the Holy Quran. Mr. Habibullah Fasihzadeh will guide us. In this program, we teach eloquent recitation of the Quran at level 2. We also express tajweed points in the manner of confrontation or compare and match and apply them to the verses of the final surahs of the Holy Quran. A beautiful opportunity for reflection indeed. Then enjoy another segment from our radio productions. We've created a range of fascinating audio pieces for your listening pleasure. Coming up, we will have Let's Recite the Quran. Stay tuned.
Let's recite the Quran.
وإذا قرأت القرآن جعلنا بينك وبين الذين لا يؤمنون بالآخرة حجابا مستورا.
القرآن نور وبيان. القرآن هدي الإيمان. القرآن مسك الختام.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم to our dear listeners. You're listening to IRB English Radio and this is Let's Recite the Quran. With me today I have Brother Ali, Brother Hassan, Brother Hussein, Brother Basun, the usual group with us in the studio. Inshallah we'll be reciting Surah Al-Fajr and Surah Al-Fajr today in this episode.